Every 10 seconds, somewhere in the world, a young girl's scream pierces the air as a blade cuts into her flesh without anesthesia. Every minute, a woman dies in childbirth from complications that could have been prevented with basic medical care. In the past 50 years, more girls have been killed simply for being female than all the men who died in every war of the 20th century combined. This isn't ancient history or distant tragedy. This is happening right now while you read these words. Yet here's what makes this crisis different from any other humanitarian catastrophe. The solution is already proven. When societies invest in women, everything changes. Economies grow, poverty drops, children survive, communities thrive. The question isn't whether empowering women works, it's why we're still debating it while millions suffer. During famines, feeding centers fill disproportionately with girls. Not because girls are weaker, but because parents choose to feed their sons first. In Afghanistan, a man named Sadan Shah watched his wife grow sick but purchased medicine only for their son, explaining with chilling logic, a son is an indispensable treasure, while a wife is replaceable. Modern technology has weaponized ancient bias. Ultrasound machines, designed to save lives, now end them by the millions through sex-selective abortion. One Chinese peasant celebrated this progress. We don't have to have daughters anymore. When governments ban the practice, infant mortality among girls mysteriously spikes. Parents simply withhold food and medicine instead. The grim calculus, allowing 100 sex-selective abortions, prevents 15 infant girls from dying of neglect. The numbers are staggering. More missing women in any decade than all 20th century genocides combined. Yet women aren't merely victims, they're economic engines. Throughout Asia's economic miracle, women powered growth, comprising 80% of factory workers in coastal China. This girl effect isn't charity, it's the most effective poverty-fighting strategy economists have discovered. When Rath escaped sex trafficking in Cambodia, she built a thriving business. From India's Self-Employed Women's Association to Bangladesh's Grameen Bank, the pattern repeats. Invest in women, and entire communities rise. Mina's decade-long nightmare began with a promise of work. Instead, she was imprisoned in a brothel where resistance meant public beatings. Denied compensation and forced to serve countless clients daily, she endured this hell while her captors profited. Then came the cruelest leverage. Her children, Naina and Vivek, became hostages ensuring compliance. When Mina helped 13 women escape, she stayed behind to protect them. The children grew up denied education, healthcare, and adequate food. When Naina reached adolescence, the cycle prepared to repeat. But Vivek became his sister's fiercest advocate. Despite beatings, he demanded her release, eventually escaped and found his mother, who had never stopped searching. Together with OPNAOP Women Worldwide, they orchestrated an unprecedented police raid. When neighbors later shunned Mina for defying tradition, her response cut through centuries of rationalization. They think that good is bad. They may not speak to me, but I know what is right, and I will stick to it. This modern slavery operates on industrial scale. Trafficking thrives at border crossings where officials monitor for terrorists and pirated goods while waving through truckloads of kidnapped girls. Slavery persists because victims are perceived as discounted humans. When Frank Grijalva partnered with Bernard Krischer's American Assistance for Cambodia, they built a school in brothel-ridden Palin for $13,000. Matched by World Bank funds, it now educates 270 students. The transformation came when American students visited for the 2003 opening, witnessing their Cambodian counterparts' gratitude turned abstract charity into human connection. To prevent trafficking, Girls Be Ambitious pays families $10 monthly to keep daughters in school. For 13-year-old Kun Sokea, living without electricity, owning one shirt, that sum means education instead of exploitation. She treasures a photo of Overlake students as proof different futures exist. The experience transforms helpers too. 17-year-old Natalie Hammerquist now studies three languages and plans a global empowerment career after watching her Cambodian friend abandon medical dreams due to cost. As Natalie says, all anyone should do is use their gifts in what way they can. It echoes the parable of the boy throwing starfish back into the ocean. You can't save them all, but you can make all the difference to that one. In Eastern Congo, women face a brutal calculus. When men leave the camp, they're shot dead. When the women leave, they're only raped. Sexual violence has become a calculated weapon. Militias discovered that in societies obsessing over female purity, nothing demoralizes communities faster than mass rape. This weaponization reveals a brutal paradox. Cultures with the most rigid moral codes end up sanctioning the most extreme violence in honor's name. Honor killings claim at least 6,000 lives annually worldwide, though families often disguise murders as accidents. The hymen, fragile, functionally pointless, is worshipped above human life itself. Girls are killed for not bleeding on wedding nights, for being raped, for speaking to boys. Yet resistance emerges. Mukhtar Mai, a Pakistani peasant woman gang-raped as punishment for her brother's alleged relationship, was expected to commit suicide to restore family honor. Instead, she fought through Pakistan's courts and used compensation money to build schools in her village. At Heal Africa Hospital in Goma, Harper McConnell created programs for rape survivors, establishing schools for children awaiting treatment and skills training in sewing, basket weaving, and soap making. Women receive materials to start businesses when they leave, reclaiming economic power alongside physical healing. Mahabuba Mohammed was 13 when her family sold her for $10 to a 60-year-old man as his second wife. After enduring rape and beatings, she escaped while 7 months pregnant. Her village rejected her, driving her to attempt suicide before an uncle intervened. Unable to afford a midwife, she tried delivering alone, but her teenage pelvis was too small. After 7 days in obstructed labor, tissue death created a fistula, a hole between the vagina and bladder or rectum, leaving her incontinent. She awoke to find her baby dead, herself unable to walk. Villagers declared her cursed, moved her to a hut at the village edge, and removed the door so hyenas would eat her. She fought them off all night with a stick. The next day, she crawled to a missionary who brought her to the Addis Ababa Fistula Hospital, run by Australian gynecologist Catherine Hamlin. For about $300, the hospital repairs fistulas, injuries that turn vibrant young women into pariahs. Yet with 30,000 to 130,000 new cases annually in Africa alone, most sufferers never receive treatment. Today, Mahabuba works at the hospital as a senior nurse's aide. Saima Mohammed's transformation came through microfinance. Her unemployed husband beat her daily. Desperately poor and trapped, Saima borrowed $65 through a microfinance group, starting an embroidery business. Within months, she employed 30 families, paid off debts, renovated their home, and kept her daughters in school. Her economic success ended the abuse. In northern Burundi, Goretti's $2 loan for fertilizer grew potatoes that sold for $7.50. She repaid the loan and bought a pregnant goat. When her husband Bernard contracted malaria, she paid his hospital bills. Respect followed. The CARE Women's Group provided health education, family planning, and literacy training. CARE's modest investment, less than $100 per woman over 3 years, transformed Goretti from virtual prisoner to community mediator and entrepreneur. Research shows lottery winners and accident victims return to baseline happiness within a year. Material circumstances matter less than we think. Sustainable joy comes from connecting to something larger than ourselves. Zach Hunter launched Loose Change to Loosen Chains at 12, raising $8,500 its first year and expanding nationwide. Jordana Confino founded Girls Learn International in middle school, pairing American classrooms with schools where girls struggle to access education. Start now, open an account on Global Giving, Kiva, or Giveology. Sponsor a girl through Plan International or Women for Women International. Join a CARE Action Network. The British anti-slavery movement sacrificed 1.8% of its GNP annually for 60 years, equivalent to $14 trillion today. 300,000 people boycotted sugar. They succeeded because ordinary people made extraordinary commitments. The women holding up half the sky aren't waiting for rescue. They're building schools, starting businesses, fighting for their daughters' futures. The question isn't whether you can make a difference, it's whether you'll choose to try.